Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the MedBullets Step 2 and 3 podcast. In today's episode, we cover the topic of renal artery stenosis found under the renal section at medbullets.com. Let's begin with a clinical snapshot. A 59-year-old man with a history of hypertension presents to his primary care physician for blood pressure management. He has tried lisinopril, hydrochlorothiazide, and losartan and had minimal effect. He has a strong family history of cardiovascular disease. Physical examination is notable for a Bruey in the right flank. Routine blood work shows an elevated creatinine. Preparations are made for a Doppler ultrasound of the renal arteries. Let's continue with an introduction to renal artery stenosis. Clinically, it is defined as a narrowing of one or both renal arteries. This often causes renovascular hypertension. Grade 1 is RAS with no clinical symptoms. Grade 2 is RAS with controlled hypertension. And grade 3 is RAS with resistant hypertension, abnormal renal function, or volume overload. In terms of epidemiology, remember that the prevalence is 7% of the population in the United States, and that it is present in up to 1 out of 3 patients with malignant or resistant hypertension. Demographically, atherosclerotic disease affects patients greater than 50 years of age, and fibromuscular dysplasia affects young women. Risk factors include atherosclerosis and its risk factors, such as smoking and a fatty diet, fibromuscular dysplasia, kidney transplant patients, high calcium or phosphorus levels, and high low-density lipoprotein cholesterol levels. The pathophysiology of RAS involves narrowing of an artery lumen due to atherosclerosis or fibromuscular dysplasia. These narrowed arteries then lead to reduced renal perfusion. The reduced perfusion leads to an activation of the renin-angiotensin system, and this increased renin leads to hypertension, hypokalemia, and hypernatremia. Also remember that bilateral renal artery stenosis can lead to volume overload, which may result in heart failure and pulmonary edema. Conditions associated with RAS involve other manifestations of atherosclerotic disease, such as carotid artery disease, lower extremity artery disease, and coronary heart disease. Moving on to the presentation, the history of patients with RAS may involve hypertension before 30 years of age. Consider fibromuscular dysplasia in young women with abrupt onset of hypertension. The history may also involve resistant or malignant hypertension, or a worsening renal function after taking an ACE inhibitor or an angiotensin receptor blocker agent. This may indicate bilateral renal artery stenosis because the ACE inhibitors and ARBs further decrease glomerular filtration rate and worsen the renal function. History may also involve a sudden unexplained volume overload, which may result in heart failure or pulmonary edema. The primary symptoms may involve symptoms of hypertension, and on physical exam of the extremities, one may note edema if the patient is volume overloaded. And on exam of the abdomen, there may be an abdominal or flank Bruey through systole and diastole. In terms of other imaging that may be performed, ultrasound is often the initial imaging in those patients less than 60 years of age with suspected RAS. The sensitivity is between 88 and 93%, and the specificity is between 82 and 89%. CT angiography is indicated in patients with normal renal function and suspected RAS. The sensitivity is about 90%, and the specificity is about 94%. MR angiography is indicated in patients with renal insufficiency and suspected RAS. The sensitivity is between 75 and 97%, and the specificity is between 64 and 93%. And finally, invasive catheter angiography is only indicated if there is high suspicion of disease, but inconclusive imaging, or if revascularization is planned. Remember that this is the gold standard for diagnosis. In terms of other studies that may be performed, this may include labs, such as the serum creatinine, to assess renal function. Remember that elevated creatinine may indicate atherosclerosis-associated RAS, and a normal creatinine may indicate fibromuscular dysplasia-associated RAS. One can also check the urine protein to assess renal function. It is typically below nephrotic range, which is less than 3.5 grams in 24 hours. In terms of histology, fibromuscular dysplasia may demonstrate medial fibroplasia. And in terms of the diagnostic criteria, remember that the arterial diameter should be reduced by more than 60%, and that there may be a string of beads appearance on angiography in fibromuscular dysplasia. In terms of the differential, make sure to think about essential hypertension, which typically is responsive to therapy. Also think about primary hyperaldosteronism, which demonstrates high levels of aldosterone. And lastly, think about obstructive sleep apnea, which demonstrates lethargy and fatigue. With regards to treatment, medical treatment options include ACE inhibitors or ARBs. Remember that this is indicated for persistent hypertension in patients with RAS. However, it is contraindicated in bilateral RAS or RAS in patients with a single kidney. One may also use calcium channel blockers or beta blockers, and these are given if patients do not respond to ACE inhibitors or ARBs. And also remember to manage lipid disorders with statins. In terms of operative treatment options, this may include revascularization, which is indicated for severe complications of RAS, such as unexplained heart failure, unexplained pulmonary edema, chronic kidney disease, and inadequately controlled hypertension. In terms of its outcomes, it may not improve outcomes in those with atherosclerotic RAS, and it cures up to 58% of hypertension in patients with fibromuscular dysplasia-associated RAS. In terms of its complications, it may cause contrast-induced acute kidney injury or allergic reaction in less than 3% of cases, or it may also result in bleeding, hematoma, or arteriovenous fistula. And complications related to renal artery stenosis involve renal dysfunction, which can progress to end-stage renal disease. There was an incidence of 4% in one study of 68 adults over 39 months. The treatment for this is dialysis and kidney transplant. In terms of prognosis, negative prognostic variables include elevated serum creatinine, comorbid heart disease, and comorbid chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And survival with treatment is 91% at 1 year, 67% at 5 years, and 41% at 10 years. Now that we've discussed the major points relating to renal artery stenosis, let's walk through some questions to apply what we've learned and get a sense of how the topic might be tested. For the first question, consider the following clinical scenario. A 25-year-old Ashkenazi Jewish man presents to his primary care physician for a follow-up visit. 1 week ago, he presented with the chief complaint of priapism while engaging in intercourse with two of his partners. During that visit, it was determined that his blood pressure was 175 over 100. He returns this week to have his vitals rechecked. His temperature is 99.5 degrees Fahrenheit or 37.5 degrees Celsius. Pulse is 80 beats per minute. Blood pressure is 182 over 100. Respirations are 10 breaths per minute, and oxygen saturation is 98% on room air. Blood work is drawn and demonstrates a sodium of 139, potassium of 3.7, chloride of 100, bicarbonate of 28, urea nitrogen of 9, glucose of 122, creatinine of 1.0, calcium of 9.8, and magnesium of 1.7. After a physical exam is performed, which of the following is the best initial step in management for this patient's underlying condition? And the answer choices are: Choice 1, begin lifestyle modification and weight loss program. Choice 2, begin lifestyle modification, weight loss program, and hydrochlorothiazide. Choice 3, 24-hour urinary cortisol. Choice 4, duplex ultrasound. Or Choice 5, serum aldosterone level. The best answer to this question is choice 4, duplex ultrasound. This is a young patient presenting with abnormally high blood pressure on repeat visits, suggesting a diagnosis of secondary hypertension, most likely caused by renal artery stenosis from fibromuscular dysplasia. The best initial step in management is a duplex ultrasound. In this patient, given the normal lab values, it is important to investigate the perfusion of the kidneys. The decreased perfusion in renal artery stenosis results in excess activation of the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, which causes hypertension, low serum potassium, and high serum bicarbonate, though these lab values are not as extreme as those seen in aldosteronoma. On physical exam, a renal bruit would likely be heard due to turbulent blood flow in the renal arteries. This should prompt the best initial test of a duplex ultrasound to investigate the perfusion of the kidneys. Once the diagnosis is confirmed, the best initial treatment would be ACE inhibitors. If ACE inhibitors fail, then surgical revascularization or stenting would be appropriate. Let's also discuss why the other choices are incorrect. Choices 1 and 2. A diagnosis of essential hypertension can be made once other causes of secondary hypertension are eliminated from the differential. Since this patient is young and is experiencing significant hypertension, causes of secondary hypertension should be investigated prior to beginning treatment for essential hypertension. The best initial step in management of benign essential hypertension is lifestyle modification. If this fails, lifestyle modification and a blood pressure medication can be started. Choice 3. A 24-hour urinary cortisol can be the best initial test or confirmatory test after a dexamethasone suppression test in the workup for Cushing's syndrome. Cushing's syndrome presents with hypertension from increased alpha-adrenergic tone, as this patient has. However, this patient's blood glucose is normal. It is on the high end of the spectrum for normal, and there is nothing in the history suggestive of hypercortisolism, such as buffalo hump, moon facies, visceral adiposities, striae, etc. Choice 5. Serum aldosterone level is the best initial step in management if aldosteronoma is the suspected diagnosis. Aldosteronoma would present with hypertension, hypokalemia, and metabolic alkalosis. This patient's lab values are within normal limits, though they are at the extremes of what would be considered normal. Finally, a bullet summary. Fibromuscular dysplasia can cause renal artery stenosis in young, commonly female patients, and presents with hypertension, with duplex ultrasound as the first step in diagnostic management. For the second question, consider the following clinical scenario. A 32-year-old woman presents to her primary care physician for a general wellness appointment. The patient has no complaints currently and just wants to be sure that she is in good health. The patient has a past medical history of asthma, hypertension, and anxiety. Her current medications include albuterol, fluticasone, hydrochlorothiazide, lisinopril, and fexofenadine. Her temperature is 99.5 degrees Fahrenheit or 37.5 degrees Celsius. Blood pressure is 165 over 95. Pulse is 70 beats per minute. Respirations are 15 breaths per minute, and oxygen saturation is 98% on room air. On exam, you note a healthy young woman with a lean habitus. Cardiac exam reveals a S1 and S2 heart sound with a normal rate. Pulmonary exam is clear to auscultation bilaterally with good air movement. Abdominal exam reveals a brewy, normal active bowel sounds, and an audible borborygmus. Neurological exam reveals cranial nerves 2 through 12 as grossly intact, with normal strength and reflexes in the upper and lower extremities. Which of the following is the best next step in management? And the answer choices are: Choice 1, raise lisinopril dose. Choice 2, add furosemide. Choice 3, ultrasound with Doppler. Choice 4, CT of the abdomen. Or choice 5, no additional management needed. The best answer to this question is choice 3, ultrasound with Doppler. This patient is young and lean, has an abdominal brewy, and has hypertension that is refractory to multiple medications, suggesting a diagnosis of renal artery stenosis. The best initial step in management is to confirm the diagnosis with an ultrasound with Doppler. Renal artery stenosis can occur in older patients due to atherosclerosis or in younger patients due to fibromuscular dysplasia. These patients present with abnormally high blood pressure that does not respond to multiple medications. Physical exam will reveal an abdominal brewy, which suggests turbulent flow through stenotic renal blood vessels. The best initial test is an ultrasound. Definitive therapy is angioplasty and stenting. Let's also discuss why the other choices are incorrect. Choice 1. Raising the lisinopril dose may be an appropriate temporary step in management prior to a surgical procedure. However, it is important to first confirm the diagnosis with an ultrasound. Choice 2. Adding furosemide to this patient's regimen would be inappropriate. Loop diuretics are not effective long-term blood pressure medications and do not address the underlying pathophysiology of excess renin-angiotensin aldosterone activation. Choice 4. A CT of the abdomen would not be the best initial test of renal artery stenosis. Magnetic resonance angiography could be performed after ultrasound if the diagnosis is uncertain or planning for a procedure is needed. Choice 5. No additional management does not address this patient's high blood pressure. Such high blood pressure could damage her glomeruli and predispose her to conditions such as stroke. Finally, a bullet summary. Renal artery stenosis presents with a renal bruit and hypertension that is refractory to multiple medications, and the best initial step in management is confirmation of the diagnosis with ultrasound. That's all for this review about renal artery stenosis. We hope that was helpful. This is the MedBullets Step 2 and 3 podcast, a daily audio review session for MedBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for medical student education. As a reminder, you can follow along with these podcast episodes by reviewing the topics directly on MedBullets.com. You can listen to these episodes on the MedBullets website or phone app while reading through the topic. If the MedBullets podcast has been valuable to you, we'd be thrilled if you considered leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow, right here, on the MedBullets Step 2 and 3 podcast.